Good morning, beautiful people.
Good morning.
My time is short, so I'll get right into it. And I have to start with a confession. And my confession is that in my early 20s, I was not an admirer of Dr. Martin Luther King. I didn't think he was frank and comprehensive enough, and that I didn't think he got to the root of the problem. I gravitated instead toward folks like Malcolm X. In fact, Dr. King, when Malcolm X was killed, sent a letter to Malcolm's widow and said that although I disagreed with Malcolm on a lot, the one thing that I loved about him and that I admired was his great ability to put his finger on the root of the problem. And I knew Malcolm put his finger on the root of the problem because I would listen to Malcolm. I heard his speeches. I knew what he said. I read what he wrote and what people wrote about him. But I didn't read about Martin Luther King because I thought I already knew about Martin Luther King. I had been spoon-fed a diet of Martin Luther King my entire life, the same diet that all of you have been spoon-fed your entire lives. What I did not know, you know, and that diet was pretty simple, right? It was Dr. King had a dream about integrating America, and he was going to do it nonviolently. That was the picture we had been given. What I did not know at the time was that that picture was tragically, purposefully, and grossly incomplete. Tragically, purposefully, and grossly incomplete. And I didn't get a fuller understanding of Dr. Martin Luther King until 1994 when I got my hands on a cassette tape. Yes, I'm dating myself, right? I got my hands on a cassette tape, and it was a program that was produced in 1974 called The Hidden Radical Dimensions of Martin Luther King Jr. And it borrowed heavily in this program from segments of a particular speech, Beyond Vietnam, or so I thought. And so I thought, whoa, this is different. I never heard this kind of stuff from Dr. King before. He gets to the root of the problem in a way I never heard before when they talk about him every January. But they only had it in segments. They only had segments of the speech. So I went out and I got the whole speech along with other Martin Luther King speeches. And when I got to the Beyond Vietnam, I listened and, I mean, it was strong, but it wasn't as strong as the segments I remembered from that Hidden Radical Dimensions program. It was assertive, but not as assertive as the one I remembered from that program. And it wasn't quite as fiery as I remembered. And what I realized was that there were two Beyond Vietnam speeches. One was delivered on April 4th, and as Hassan said, another was delivered 16 days later. And the key to the one that was delivered 16 days later was that it was delivered after he had gotten the critical response from politicians and other organizations. He had been attacked and criticized relentlessly for making that speech. Everybody from President Johnson to the president of the NAACP, every media outlet from the New York Times, a mainstream newspaper, to the Pittsburgh Courier, a black newspaper, criticized him for speaking out against the war in Vietnam, said he shouldn't mix civil rights and peace. They didn't match. And that he was doing a disservice to both. And so when King, 16 days later, did his second Beyond Vietnam speech, it was called Why I Opposed the War in Vietnam, and he did it back at home. So he was with a friendly crowd. He was a little more comfortable, and he had felt the bite of the criticism. And so this speech is laced with punctuations that weren't in the original, so I thought I'd add to what we're doing today by going over that second Beyond Vietnam speech, saying a few things from it. First, he starts it off by saying, let me say at the outset that I believe the war in Vietnam is unjust, evil, and futile. He started the speech. He didn't start the first one off that way. Unjust, evil, and futile. When people suffer the kind of criticism that Dr. King suffered as a result of that, they often back down. But he did not back down. He came and just out the gate, unjust, evil, and futile. He didn't back down. He doubled down. And it shows the strength of character that he had. Then he moves on and starts to talk about the government and the press. And he said, There's been a lot of applauding over the years. Oh, the press, they were so noble in their praise of our nonviolent movement. They applauded us when we said, be nonviolent towards segregationists like Bull Connor and Jim Clark. He said, but there's something strangely inconsistent about a nation and a press that will praise you when you say, be nonviolent toward Bull Connor, but will curse and damn you when you say, be nonviolent toward little brown Vietnamese children. There's something wrong with that press. Then he goes over the history of Vietnam, and I'm going to just pull out a little section of it. He says, and who are we supporting in Vietnam today? It's a man by the name of General Ky, who fought with the French against his own people, and who said on one occasion that the greatest hero of his life is Hitler. This is who we're supporting in Vietnam today, oh, our government. And the press generally won't tell us these things, but God told me to tell you this morning. The truth must be told. Then he moved on to talk about poverty and connect it to the war. And he said a nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military than it does on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. He didn't back down, he doubled down. Then he began to connect it to segregation, and he said, so we've been repeatedly faced with a cruel irony of watching Negro and white boys on TV screens as they kill and die together for a nation that has been unable to seat them together in the same schoolroom. So we watch them in brutal solidarity burning the huts of a poor village. But we realized that they would hardly live on the same block in Chicago or Atlanta. I could not be silent in the face of such cruel manipulation of the poor. One insightful piece about this particular speech comes from the person that writes it. Many people may not realize, but the first draft of the speech was written by a man named Vincent Harding. He was a historian and scholar. And he wrote the first draft of the speech. And when he was interviewed, he said, what King was trying to do with the speech was to bring the country together, to sense the relationship between its sickness at home to the sickness of its policy overseas. And one of the most memorable quotes from King himself about it, he said, so I was increasingly compelled to see the war as an enemy of the poor and attack it as such. I see the war as an enemy and attack it as an enemy. That's strong language coming from Dr. King. Attack it as such. That it's not enough to take a position on evil. You must launch an attack against evil. And in King's mind, those evils were poverty, racism, and militarism. That we are all here for a purpose, and that purpose is to realize our God-given potential as individuals and as the communities that we comprise. We as individuals have a potential. We as a community have a potential. We as a city have a potential. As a state and as a nation, we have a potential, and our God-given purpose is to realize it. And King understood that poverty is the enemy of the realization of human potential. That militarism is the enemy of the realization of human potential. That racism is the enemy of the realization of human potential. And all of them had to be attacked as such. As progressives, oftentimes we like to defend what's right, but we have a hard time attacking what's wrong. I'll say that again. As progressives, we oftentimes we'll defend what's right, but we have a harder time attacking what is wrong. And the folks who are the enemies of human potentials don't have any problem defending what is wrong and attacking what is right. And we have to get much better at attacking what is wrong. And when I say attacking what is wrong, I mean a sustained, comprehensive, all-out assault. We have to get tired of losing. Am I making sense here? And that is embodied in King's word, is identifying it as the enemy and attacking it as such. King said in the end, he said, let me say finally that I oppose the war in Vietnam because I love America. I speak out against this war because I'm disappointed with America. And there can be no great disappointment where there is no great love. It is my hope that we will love our nation and our state and our city by taking inspiration from beyond Vietnam and using it to move ourselves, to move beyond poverty and into a world where people can make a decent living for themselves, all people, to move beyond segregation and move into a world where we can share common dreams and see our common destiny together, to move beyond racism, to a point where we can acknowledge, honestly acknowledge our prejudices as a way of ensuring that we don't act on those prejudices. That is the work that Dr. King was doing, and that is the work we have ahead of us. Today you're going to hear many points of view on Dr. King and his words. His words and work had an important impact on my development as an intellectual and political being, and I hope they have an equally profound effect on yours. With that, we will have a recitation of Beyond Vietnam, A Time to Break the Silence. Thank you.